This podcast is part of the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T back at you. Welcome to our lucky episode. Yep, this is episode 13. Well, as a part-time range safety officer, I see a lot of new shooters coming into the range, and I love it. The more gun owners we have, the more secure our rights as people are. I gotta tell you, my range is jam-packed on the weekends, folks. That's great for business, because it means I get to keep doing this job, and that's good because the job's actually a lot of fun. I like it. But just a little over 4 years ago, I was one of those new shooters. Yeah. So I remember what it's like to see all these types of guns out here and go, whoa. For someone just getting into it, they're probably thinking, well, this will be my one firearm, and I want to get this right. It's kind of like buying a car. There's so many types out there. They all do the same thing, too. They get you from point A to point B. What do you choose? And should you choose only one? Here in the U.S., most suburban families have more than one car. One's a two-door or four-door for economy or sport, and the other one's very often a minivan of some sort, you know, for hauling around the kids and all their soccer or lacrosse gear. And then some folks have pickup trucks, different vehicles for different jobs. Likewise, most people have more than one screwdriver, too. You know, flathead, Phillips, Torx, whatever. And they're different sizes, too. The larger screwdrivers for the big screws, also known as encounters with politicians, and the smaller screwdrivers for the smaller screws, also known as encounters with politicians. Well, it's the same with guns. We'll just take handguns for a moment. You got them all the way down to the pocket-sized 25 ACPs, all the way up to the big hunting revolvers and 500 Smith & Wesson Magnum. I've actually fired one of those. They're fun. Clint Eastwood's famous 44 Magnum in the Dirty Harry movies is actually a classic hunting revolver. Oh, and speaking of revolvers, handguns differ in not just size, but basic operation, too. You got basically two types, your revolvers and your semi-automatics. Glock's pistols are probably the most famous of the semi-auto types here in this country, thanks to so many police departments that use them nowadays. In the revolver world, Smith & Wesson is still a household name. Cops carried that company's .38 Special and .357 Magnum revolvers for decades. And some security guard outfits, even a few police precincts, still use this type of revolver. Yep, even today. And then there are the long guns. Now these come in two varieties, rifles and shotguns. Rifles typically shoot a small diameter projectile really, really fast and really, really far. The most famous examples are, probably the .30-06 Springfield, the .30-30 Winchester, also known as a white-tailed deer's worst nightmare, and the good old .22, but there are plenty of other types as well. They can shoot long range or short range. Rifles are great for hunting any old place where there's a good population of game animals for the freezer. I'm including not just deer, by the way, but also smaller game too, squirrels, rabbits, possums, groundhogs, and so on. Shotguns, by contrast, are closer-in firearms, just by their nature. Their main claim to fame is firing a bunch of small projectiles called shot. This is like when you hear of shot-peening metal. You've heard about that, right? That sort of stuff. Those little balls. You usually hear of shotguns for bird hunting. You know, stuff like geese, ducks, turkeys, pheasants, and such. Annie Oakley, the great American sharpshooter, well, she was great with any sort of firearm, of course, but she was perhaps best known for her work with the .410 shotgun in the Buffalo Bill Wild West shows. Shotguns are also excellent for home defense, it turns out. One of the best things to have when you're facing that home invader is a 12 or 20 gauge shotgun with some buckshot in it. That usually is enough to change that home invader's mind pretty darn quickly. That's why the police have those shotguns at the back of their patrol cars. It's for a reason. A lot of people look on the internet for advice, too. Hey, good idea, and I recommend it, but as old Honest Abe Lincoln posted on an internet forum recently, don't believe everything you read on the internet. You got plenty of what I call net ninjas out there. these folks don't really know what they're talking about, but oh boy, they sure come off like they do in some of the online gun forums. I've met a few of these folks. They talk like they're the authority of God. Yeah, but then they step up to the line at the range, and that tells a very different story. They're hitting everything but the doggone target. So be careful with some of the advice out there. Now, I completely understand why folks are kind of nervous about what to choose. Remember, I was a newbie not so many years ago. What if it's not the right one for you? Maybe the recoil is going to be too much, or the grip's not the right size for your hands, or it doesn't fit in your pocket or your purse or your nightstand or whatever else. In most states in the U.S., fortunately, that's easy to fix. You just sell that gun to someone for whom it's a better fit and get one that's a better fit for you. But that's not true everywhere, unfortunately. For some people, buying a firearm, just buying the firearm and getting to where you can legally take possession of it, is a really big deal. Depends on the laws where you live. Here, I'll give you an example. There's a reporter named Emily Miller in Washington, D.C. Their gun laws are ultra strict there in D.C. Well, after the landmark Heller and McDonald Supreme Court decisions, D.C. needed to at least allow it. So, Emily wanted to find out what it takes to legally buy a gun if you live in Washington, D.C. So, she went through the process. She details this in her excellent series, Emily Gets Her Gun. It's worth your reading. Well, unfortunately, she ended up with a gun that wasn't exactly optimal for her smaller hands. You see, I've met her. She is a little pixie of a woman, and the grip on her gun's kind of big. But if she were to sell her gun and get one that's a better fit for her hand, the process to legally get another gun is absolute hell, not to mention incredibly expensive. She doesn't want to go through that again. Of course not. So she makes do with a gun that works well, but isn't the best fit for her hands. And even if folks live in a state where buying and selling guns is pretty easy, like, I don't know, say Texas or Washington State, or at least for now Washington State, they might feel a little intimidated by the whole thing. After all, this is guns, and these folks are not experienced shooters. They're just like I was a little over 4 years ago. Newbies. Therefore, this podcast episode is dedicated to the Emily Millers of the world who would like to become gun owners and would like to avoid that kind of situation. We'll take a station ID break and get right into it. Stay tuned.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
We're back and we're talking about your first gun. What should you do? How do you know what to believe and what not to? Well, shucks, that's easy. Everything I say is by definition right. Treat it like the word of God. Well, okay, maybe I ought to, revise and extend that remark, huh? Folks, in seriousness, I'm no expert. You want an expert? That'd be James Ammosmith White. I'm just a guy out here who was a newbie a little over 4 years ago. Being a range officer's helped me out a good deal. I do see a lot of folks come through the range, so I can give you that perspective. For the majority of new shooters these days, especially city folks and suburbanites, their first firearm is a handgun of some sort. That's not necessarily true out in the country. Out there, a person's first firearm is very often a .22 rifle or a .410 shotgun, or maybe nowadays a .243 Winchester rifle. Something relatively smaller with not a lot of recoil, but that would still be good for bringing in that rabbit or pheasant or whatever other small game animal for the dinner table. In the case of the .243, you can even bring white-tailed deer home with proper shot placement. Of course, most country folk, I don't need to be telling them anything. They're the ones teaching me. So our focus here will be more on them thar city slickers and suburbanites like me. And for these folks, typically the handgun is the first purchase. Next episode, we'll cover rifles and shotguns in greater detail. Now, just so you know my own personal biases up front, yes, unlike a lot of these news talking heads, I will tell you my personal biases up front. Among handguns, I do tend to favor revolvers a bit. Not saying I don't like semi-autos, I do like them. Basically, anything that feels good in the hand and is comfortable to shoot and goes bang reliably, I enjoy shooting it. But I do gravitate toward the wheel guns somewhat. Among rifles, I don't really have much of a preference. They're all just fine. Among shotguns, I prefer pump action types. Just in the name of full disclosure. Now, first things first. You've got to decide what you want the firearm for. Most people want one for self-defense, either for the home or to carry out on the street. You know, just in case. Others want one for target shooting because, well, target shooting's fun. I get a real kick out of it myself. Others want one to have just in case regulations come along to ban them in the future. In light of recent events, meaning that school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut a few months ago, that's actually a possibility. Slim, in my view, but certainly more possible than before. Just look what happened recently in New York State. Oh, and what's being proposed in California now. Let's deal with that last item first. It's good that you wish to become a gun owner, and I definitely encourage that. But don't let your choice of firearm be dictated by threats of bans. You may end up with a firearm that isn't the best fit for you, so I'd suggest a different course. Let's take the case of self-defense, then. What you want, first and foremost, is something that's comfortable for you to shoot well. I know some folks will say, there's the 45, and then there's everything else. How many times have I heard that one? It's just as important to remember the other part of that, though. A hit with a 22 is better than a miss with a 45. There's an old grandma who successfully defended herself with a 22 revolver not too long ago. It was in the NRA's Armed Citizen column, and there was also, I think, a newspaper article about it, as I recall. That's what she, this old grandma, could shoot well at her age, her health, and her strength level. You know, matter of fact, she asked the cops to reload that 22 revolver for her after the fact, which they were glad to do under the circumstances, of course. Even with all that, though, consider this. Even with all that, older, not very strong anymore, declining health, she was still able to do what she needed to do, defend herself. And she did it with that 22. Now, is a 22 optimal for self-defense? No, of course not. But when you need something, it beats having nothing. So let's talk about what might be a bit more optimal. A guy who's been shooting for a long time once told me, use the biggest round you can shoot well out of the lightest platform that you can shoot well. Having shot nearly every rental gun we have in the store, I have to agree to a point. However, I would also add that you actually enjoy shooting as an additional qualifier. See, if you can shoot a 45 auto out of a featherweight Springfield XDS, but you don't enjoy doing so, you're much less likely to practice. And like anything else, the only way to become a better shot is through regular practice. Experience with new shooters has taught me that, in most cases, the 45 auto is not a good round to start with. Not at first. Well, at least not in most handgun platforms out there. Why? The 45 auto's got some recoil. To me, it feels about like 357 Magnum rounds, which can be a little stiff. Now, I personally enjoy that, but I didn't start there. I'll give you an example of how I did start a couple people off. My camera lady from the reloading videos. Some of you have seen them. You know of Miss Bleeding Heart Conservative. Well, she got started with 38 Special in what's called a service-sized revolver. This is what the police used to carry for decades before they went to the 9mm semi-auto. The 38 Special seems to strike a really good balance in getting the job done without a lot of recoil. That's why my camera lady likes it. It's the best round for her. Most service-size revolvers nowadays that shoot 38 Special are also rated for the considerably more powerful 357 Magnum cartridge. That's the other classic police cartridge. So with a revolver of this type, the 357 rated type, you get that added flexibility. You can therefore shoot them mild or wild, depending on your preference. Among those considering revolvers, I tend to recommend this type, a 357 Magnum service-sized revolver. Examples include Smith & Wesson's K or L frames, Ruger's Security 6 or GP100, Taurus's Model 65 and 66, and there are some others as well. Any 357 Magnum revolver will happily fire the less powerful, oh, and less expensive, by the way, 38 Special rounds all day, and this is exactly what most police units did for decades. Some still do today. When I wanted to get my mother to consider shooting a handgun, this is the other example, and she was definitely gun-shy. I used a light 38 special load and a good service-sized 357 Magnum revolver. In no time, she was nailing bullseyes. She's also gone from someone who didn't ever want to shoot to someone who rather enjoys it now. No, she ain't Jerry Mitchell-like. Well, no one is, but, well, let's just say you don't want to mess with her either. The 38 Special is a mighty fine round, and she does shoot it pretty well. I know, Dirty Harry carried the 44 Magnum.
44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and will blow your head clean off.
But that's the movies. In real life, 44 Magnum ammunition is actually meant for hunting big, hairy, scary animals like grizzly bears. It's way overkill for general self-defense. That said, all 44 Magnum revolvers will also happily take the considerably less powerful 44 Special round, which, by the way, is what Dirty Harry actually had in his 44 Magnum. It's just like how 357 Magnum guns will shoot 38 Special just fine, too. Likewise, 44 Magnum guns will shoot 44 Special just fine. I've done this myself on many, many occasions with our 44 Mag rental gun at work. The 44 Special round is said to be an excellent defense round. However, 44 ammunition of either type, Special or Magnum, is pretty darn expensive. At the time of this podcast, you're talking about double the price for either one of those from what 38 Special costs. 38 Special, way less costly. Oh, the same applies for 45 Colt, too, by the way. Taurus makes a revolver called the Judge, which is actually kind of fun to shoot if you get the all-steel one. The 45 Colt round is just as effective on desperados today as it was back in the cowboy days. And that's pretty doggone effective. But it's expensive ammo. Remember, we're talking about recommendations for your first firearm. I'm not saying don't get a 44 or even a 45 Colt later on down the line. Heck, they're a lot of fun. I love them. I just don't recommend one of those as your first gun. For city and suburban homes, I think a 357 Magnum is a better choice. The ability to also shoot 38 Special is a huge advantage. When we come back, we'll talk about the semi-automatic pistols such as the Glocks, the 1911s, and similar ones. Stay tuned for more gun talk.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.
Okay, we're talking about suggestions for your first firearm. We just got through discussing revolvers, and among them, I had recommended a 357 Magnum for its ability to shoot both the high-powered Magnum rounds and the easier recoiling 38 Special rounds. Now let's talk semi-automatic pistols. The market for semi-autos seems to be even more varied than that for revolvers, and believe me, that's saying something. Like I mentioned earlier, a lot of people say, there's the 45 auto and then there's everything else. Well, there is some truth to that, but it's not quite universal. They are certainly very good, and I do like them, but not everyone can handle the recoil of the 45 auto pistols. There are several choices, but I wouldn't go smaller than the 380 auto, and personally, I prefer the 9mm Parabellum, also known as the 9mm Luger, or just simply 9mm. Why 9mm? Several reasons. 1. The ammo's cheap, even compared to 38 Special. 2. Like 38 Special, 9mm ammo's ubiquitous. It's available everywhere. 3. Recoil on most 9mm service-sized pistols is fairly minimal. 4. You do get a fair amount of rounds in that magazine. Oh, and this assumes you live in what we often call free America, where standard capacity 15 and 17 round magazines are not a problem. And 5. 9mm hollow points are comparable to 38 Special hollow points in effectiveness. There's some talk on the internet, matter of fact, there's a lot of talk on the internet about how 9mm doesn't have effective stopping power. Well, if you're talking about the so-called ball or full metal jacket ammo, the terms are synonymous, ball and full metal jacket. If you're talking about that kind of ammo, yeah, they've got a point. But when you're talking hollow point ammo, the story changes quite a bit, just like it does with 38 Special. Since hollow points are more expensive than the full metal jacket or ball ammo, do your marksmanship practice at the range with the inexpensive ball ammo. Then after you get home and clean your gun, you are going to clean your gun, I hope, then go ahead and load up with your hollow points for self-defense. You save a good amount of money this way. Another good round to consider is the 40 Smith & Wesson, or 40 S&W. It seems that the two rounds carried most by the police nowadays are 9mm and 40. The 40 round is going to give you a bit more power, with a minimal reduction in magazine capacity. It's not that much. However, you know the old saying, ain't no such thing as a free lunch. With that increased power does come more recoil. Some people do find that recoil somewhat objectionable, so they're not as likely to practice. However, it's worth trying one out. If you don't mind the recoil, the 40 is a good choice. Ammo's about the same price as 38 Special, and it's also widely available. And now we get to the 45 Auto. This round's been around for more than a century, since the year 1911 at least, and it's still very popular today, 102 years later. Why? Well, 'cause it works. It was made famous in John Browning's brilliant military handgun design, the M1911 for the U.S. Army. This was the sidearm that the Army used until the 1980s when they went to the 9mm because the rest of NATO was already using it. Well, now they're talking about going back to the 45 Auto. Why? Because the 45 works really well. Gee, there's a pattern here. The one downside to the 45? Well, actually, there are two. One, I've already mentioned that the recoil is definitely a factor, even more than the 40. And two, the ammo is widely available and it's popular, but it's not exactly cheap. Well, that's because it's just bigger and it therefore costs considerably more to make. Now, I have no problem at all shooting the 9mm, the 40, or the 45. Matter of fact, one of my favorite semi-autos to shoot is the Glock 21 that we have at work. Here's what that is. It's a service-sized pistol in 45 auto. This thing's just a perfect fit for my hand. You know, plus, I've been shooting for a few years, so I'm used to the recoil. I really do like the 45 auto and that Glock 21 in particular. But Glock, of course, isn't the only one who makes a good pistol chamber for this cartridge or any other. Far from it. Smith & Wesson's Military and Police, M&P, in 45 is a fine gun. As is Springfield's XD series in 45. And, of course, you can't mention the 45 auto round without mentioning the 1911 pistols. I know several folks who have 1911s, and they love them. All of these types of pistols work well. But for most people's first gun, and remember, that's what we're talking about, your first gun, I wouldn't generally recommend the 45 auto. Not yet. How could I say that right after I just got through telling you how much I like it and how good it is? Easy. This is your first firearm. I keep saying that. That means you probably don't know how to shoot very well just yet. You might not know how to shoot at all just yet. Hey, nothing wrong with that. Everyone who shoots has a first time, including Cowboy T, and oh boy do I remember my first time ever shooting a handgun. It was up in Seattle with 38 Special. I'm sure glad I didn't start out on a 40 or 45. Think of it like this. We don't typically start people out learning how to drive on, say, a BMW 7 Series or a Mercedes S-Class or a Ferrari or a full-size pickup truck. Oh, sure, there's some who have. Yeah, of course. But that's not typically the norm among us city and suburban folks. Usually it's something a little more like a Toyota Corolla or a Honda Civic, maybe an Accord or a Nissan Sentra, something more along those lines. It's the same with your first handgun. Like the old folks say, crawl before you walk and walk before you run. This is why I tend to recommend 9mm as a first semi-auto, or perhaps a 40, depending on someone's demonstrated tolerance for recoil. Now, which type to get? A revolver or a semi-auto? Oh man, talk about holy wars. Ford, Chevy, and Dodge ain't got nothing on that fight. Whew. Well, we're going to answer that holy question soon as we get back.
Did you hear?
What?
There was another burglary last night, just down the street, and the family was home sleeping.
Scary. You ever thought about buying a gun?
Yeah, but I worry about my kids. You hear about all these gun accidents.
Accidents do happen, it's true. But the fact is, less than 200 children die in gun accidents every year. Far more children accidentally drown or get killed riding bikes. And thousands of children die in car accidents every year.
Ooh, talk about scary.
And according to the statistics, people who own guns, parents like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year and save countless lives.
Wow. Do you own a gun?
Yeah, I do.
Get the facts on gun control. Visit gunfacts.info. That's gunfacts.info. GUNFACTS.INFO.
Earlier we posed the question, revolver or semi-auto? Well, there are pluses and minuses to each. Here's how I see it. The revolver has, typically speaking, a max of 6 rounds. That doesn't compare to a typical 9mm 17-round magazine, no. But older cops had a saying. It goes, 6 for sure. Any gun can malfunction since it's a mechanical device, just like any other mechanical device. But revolvers are considerably less prone to do that. It's because of their nature. They simply cannot have certain types of failures, we call them jams, that semi-autos can have. Among them are stovepipe failures, double feeds, and susceptibility to something called limp wristing. None of these things can happen with a revolver. It's physically impossible due to the nature of the operation. Also, if need be, you can fire a revolver from inside a coat, jacket, purse, and where a semi-auto will snag up and fail after the first shot because of the slide, a revolver will keep right on going. This is especially true of any of the models where the hammer's covered up inside of the frame. That's why a lot of cops that carry semi-auto pistols also keep small pocket revolvers as their backup guns, just in case. However, the semi-auto has certain advantages over the revolver, too. First, which I've mentioned already, is magazine capacity. A revolver can typically have 6 rounds. A 9mm semi-auto can have 17 in the magazine. A 40 can typically have about 15. And reloading that semi-auto means simply pushing a button to drop out the empty magazine and then slapping a new one in. If I'm going slow, I do it in 2 seconds flat. Here, I got one handy. I'll show you how easy this is. Let's see. Let's get this going here. Oh no, I'm out of bullets. I'm ready. It's that easy. It's fast to reload these things. Seriously fast. You just heard it. And if you're talking about a 9mm, well, like I mentioned earlier, the ammo's cheap, and that's a good thing. A little Martha Stewart there. But like I also mentioned, a semi-auto is a bit more complex than a revolver. Most of them have manual safeties, including the one I just activated for you. To chamber a round, you got to rack the slide. It's not hard to learn how to do this. You just heard me do it. But some people with not a lot of hand strength can have some trouble with it. Kind of like that old grandma I mentioned earlier with the .22 revolver. She would definitely have some challenges racking the slide. Why do the police typically carry semi-autos today? Because they're cops. Because of their job, they might need to put down multiple assailants. When you're dealing with 4 gangbangers shooting at you, you're probably going to be really glad for those 17-round magazines. Generally, civilians don't face groups of hardened gangbangers trying to mess with them. But it is possible in some parts of the country, admittedly. Like, say, Chicago, or Los Angeles, or New York City, or Philadelphia, Detroit, Oakland, California, Newark, New Jersey, or even our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Gun-free zone. Gun-free zone. excuse me. Sorry about that. My personal choice, .357 revolver. Why? Because at 2 a.m. in the morning when someone's breaking through the glass of one of my windows, I'm going to be groggy. Of course, just woke up. I want things as simple as they can be. I hope that never comes to pass, but if it does, I won't be in a mental state to be messing around with safeties and stovepipes and double feeds and such. I need to know it'll go bang when it absolutely, positively needs to go bang. And even though I only got 6, I know I got those 6. Another guy I know prefers a 1911 pistol. He knows them very well. He used them in the Army. And that's what he feels most comfortable with, so that's what he uses. And that is exactly the right choice then. Another fella I know has a Glock 9mm. He loves it. He's learned that thing inside and out. He can actually field strip and correctly reassemble his Glock blindfolded. He's taught himself how to deal with jams through regular practice. Folks, I have every confidence that both of these individuals could also defend themselves in that kind of God forbid situation. So, which one should you get? whichever one you can shoot best and most comfortably. Yeah, I know. Gee, thanks. So how do you find that out? Well, fortunately, there's a way. There are plenty of ranges out there that, get this, rent guns. Yeah, mine's one of them. And it's very likely that there's one or more where you live. Try out as many as you can before you make your purchase. The more, the better. That Glock 21 that's such a great fit for my hand, it would be an absolutely terrible fit for that little pixie reporter I mentioned earlier, Emily Miller. It's also a bad fit for a couple of guys at work. They don't like them at all. Ruger's SR9. Some people love them, some people hate them. You don't know until you try shooting it, so don't be shy. Try them out. I've had people try as many as 7 different guns during a shooting session. These were some wise people, folks. When they eventually did plunk down the cash, they were way more prepared than they had been, and I've watched it pay off for them. Also, I very strongly recommend you take a handgun safety course. The NRA's basic pistol course is one that I've taken, and I can recommend it. I know, the NRA, right? Well, I'll tell you, I don't care at all for the political grandstanding and some of the, well, crap that comes out of the mouths of some of their leaders. But it turns out they're not just some lobbying arm for the Republican Party. Turns out there's more there. Their actual mission is marksmanship and firearms safety instruction. Yeah, and their classes are actually good. They've been doing that since their inception back in the 19th century. There are NRA-certified instructors all over the country who teach these courses, and no, you don't have to be a member of the NRA to take them, thank goodness, for your own safety, as well as, well, mine and everybody else's. Please take one. We actually have a rule at our range now. Before we let you out there with a firearm, you've got to be able to show some basic competence with that firearm. This is for safety. You've got to know what a sight picture is. You've got to know what a cylinder or a slide is as appropriate for your gun. You've got to know how to correctly load and unload your ammunition. You've got to know about proper trigger squeeze. This is all basic stuff. We're not asking for Elmer Keith here, folks. I have personally turned a few people away until they take a class or until they come with someone who's had sufficient experience. Now, when we do that, we do it as gently as we can, of course. But, folks, safety's got to come first. This is guns, after all. It's nothing to be afraid of, but it's still deadly serious business, and it needs to be respected as such, just like driving your car. Whenever you drive, safety first, right? If not, then you shouldn't be driving a car. Same with handling firearms. Safety first. No exceptions. No excuses. So, go take a course. Then, after you do that, try some firearms out. If you have friends who shoot, go ahead and broach the subject with them. Oh, but won't they think I'm a weirdo for wanting a gun? Just the opposite. You kidding? They'll probably be tickled pink that you're showing an interest. They'll probably be all set to offer you recommendations on what to buy, what to look for, and such. Seriously, those like me who enjoy marksmanship, we tend to be a pretty friendly lot overall, especially when someone takes an interest in our hobby. Oh yeah, that brings me to something else too. This is the other reason why I recommend you try out as many guns as you can before you make a purchase. You're going to get recommendations. All sorts of recommendations. And some of them might sound contradictory. Remember, Ford, Chevy, Dodge. They're all good. But people do have their personal preferences, including me. But it's got to be a good fit for you. I don't ever buy a vehicle without a test drive. I don't ever just take somebody's word for it. I always go test drive the car. So it's likewise perfectly reasonable to take a type of gun for a test shoot. That's why a lot of ranges rent guns, so you can try them out. Oh, here's another thing that can happen. Sometimes a gun that feels good in your hand at the gun show or at the store might not feel so good when you're actually firing it. I've had that experience myself, actually. This was with a Ruger Redhawk with what's called a Hogue monogrip on it. It felt okay in the hands, right up until I fired a few rounds with it. Then I hated it. Turned out to be a terrible fit for my hands when recoil got involved. Turns out we also have a Redhawk at the store. This one's got Packmeyer presentation grips instead of the Hogue grips, and those Pacmires felt much better in my hands under recoil. Same exact model of gun, just different grips. Sometimes you can do that, just replace the grips with another type that fits your hand better. By the way, did I mention it might be a good idea to try out some guns before you buy? To your range safety talking head, listen, you should. So that's really the answer to the question, revolver or semi-auto. It's whichever one fits your hands better and that you enjoy shooting the most. That's going to be different for each person. For me, it's a good revolver with a Pacmire presentation grip or a Glock 21 semi-auto. For you, it might be a Taurus Model 65, a Ruger LCR, a Smith & Wesson Military and Police 9mm, or maybe a 1911 type. For simplicity and the ability to shoot from inside a pocket or a purse, I go with the revolver. For round count, I go with the semi-auto. Either way, it's got to be a good fit for you, and you've got to be comfortable with it. It's important to understand this. That means comfortable enough to be ready to point it at the criminal about to attack you or your loved ones with the not-so-subtle message.
You gotta ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
And it means being ready to actually pull the trigger then, if need be. That's ultimately what it means to own a gun. We hope it never happens. But isn't that why you're looking at buying one? Just in case? So make your choice a good one. Ask questions. Take them for a test drive. And whatever you buy, get something that you actually like. This is Cowboy T signing off until next time, when we'll discuss rifles and shotguns. Till then, safe shooting, ask questions, practice often, and thanks for listening.